Good morning, Your Honor. Heather Winslow on behalf
of... Ms. Winslow.
Good morning. This case is really about balancing 2 hours of the court's time against the defendant's right to testify on his own behalf. Mr. Cook went to trial before the district court, and the case against him by the government consisted, I think fairly said, of circumstantial evidence. Documentation, bank records, union documentation, union rule books, etc. There certainly was no direct evidence in this case of an embezzlement. So the case below in the district court was the case of circumstantial evidence against Keith Cook. During the course of the trial, there were a number of continuances. The trial calendar was sporadic, to say the least. Mr. Cook, on the last day of the government's testimony, decided that he wanted to testify. This was a change from his previous position. And for various reasons that are set forth in our brief and echoed in the government's brief, we were unable to prepare Mr. Cook for his testimony.
Ms. Winslow, what specific prejudice did Mr. Cook suffer because the court denied the continuance? In other words, how would a continuance have helped him?
Well, Judge, when you look at the government's closing argument in particular and the number of times and the stress that it placed on his inability to answer immediately or answer clearly the government's questions on cross-examination, there lies the prejudice. If Mr. Cook had had an opportunity to be prepared, to be subjected to a cross-examination, as he would have been if we'd had the opportunity, he would know what he was facing, and he would have been able to given the chance, to personally look through the exhibits that he would be handed and have an answer that would have been less compelling for the government's closing argument.
I know, but that's a very, very general argument. I mean, he hasn't pointed to the exculpatory evidence he would have found or additional questions or much of anything else. I mean, it's sort of an unsupported assertion of prejudice.
This is a case that the substantive conduct that was charged took place many, many years ago, 2001 or so, and the trial did not occur, of course, until 2007. So during that period of time, Mr. Cook certainly had not had the opportunity, or I should say, to be perfectly candid, not taken the opportunity to look through the documentation that would be the government's case against him. So it's not to say that he would have come up with some exculpatory evidence, just simply that he would have had the opportunity to recall himself why certain checks were written on behalf by him on behalf of the union, what they were written for, where, if anywhere, was the documentation supporting his purchase of supplies, etc. So it's more a matter of an opportunity for reflection, but the question here in this case, I can see where Your Honor's concern is, but in this case we're talking about 2 hours. We asked the judge to allow Mr. Cook to testify.
One wonders, if it's only 2 hours, why Mr. Cook didn't take the time to consult with his attorneys during the 2 days the trial was in recess.
One does wonder that, and I think that's a fair point. It's pointed out by the government, but the fact is he did not.
Well, but if a defendant deliberately surrenders an opportunity, a perfectly good opportunity to consult with counsel, why does he have a claim on either the judge or the time of the jurors to take time at their expense?
If you look at the scheduling in this matter, and I understand Your Honor's point, I hope this is responsive. If you look at the scheduling in this matter, what we were requesting is that Mr. Cook testify when we return to court on the 15th. His testimony was to be the last testimony heard on this day in any case. So the question really is whether the 2 hours of the court's time or the jury's time that would have been spent on what was anyway the last day of trial really balances against a defendant's right to testify on his own behalf.
Actually, the real question is whether he should bear the consequences of his own indecision and failure to prepare.
That may in fact be the question for the court. And I think that there are larger principles at stake in this particular appeal. Mr. Cook did not take the opportunity.
How long was the case pending?
The case was pending for a number of years.
How many years?
Two.
Okay.
Now,
and the trial was conducted over a period of a couple of weeks with multiple interruptions due to the court's calendar and
that is correct.
No opportunity was taken to prepare his testimony or consult with him about his decision to testify during those recesses?
Well, I would say that we did have a number of conversations with him, and as the brief sets forth and the record sets forth in great detail, we did attempt to prepare him for his testimony for various reasons, because he had to work during these periods of time. He was unable to...
Yeah,
I understand, Your Honor. I understand, Your Honor. But nonetheless, there we are, left on the last day of trial, asking for a two-hour continuance to prepare an individual to testify on his own behalf. The court was obviously frustrated with Mr. Cook. I think counsel was frustrated with Mr. Cook. But nonetheless, the court's frustration caused it to overlook the importance of the decision that Mr. Cook had to make, the importance of his testimony on his own behalf, and we believe that his frustration overwhelmed his good judgment, and in fact it was an abuse of discretion. If Your Honors have no further questions, I'll reserve the balance of my time.
Mr. Bovinger.
Good morning, Your Honors. David Bovinger on behalf of the United States. That may please the court. District court in this case did not abuse its discretion. It fully considered the defendant's argument for the continuance and attempted to accommodate the defendant, at least under the circumstances, by recessing early on Friday, sending the jury out for an early lunch and giving counsel that hour and a half to prepare the defendant to cross-examine. As the court recognized, there have been ample opportunity throughout this case for Mr. Cook to prepare his testimony. The indictment had been returned 18 months prior to trial. The trial itself covered a period of 2 weeks plus a day. In the first week of trial, there were 2 days where the court did not sit, and as well as the weekend for preparation. On Friday, when the defendant filed his motion, the prior 2 days, the court had not sat. The defendant had opportunity during that time to prepare. In fact, counsel had scheduled meetings to meet with Mr. Cook on both of those days. And Mr. Cook chose inexplicably to go to work instead. Didn't give this case or his testimony the priority it deserved, and the consequences are his. I believe Judge Castillo, in ruling on this motion, found that whatever time constraint issues or problems had arisen were all of the defendant's making. That had opportunity and did not take advantage of that opportunity. Court likewise noted that the court would be inconvenienced, and it was a burden on the court's trial calendar to grant this extension or continuance. He had another trial that was scheduled to commence immediately upon the conclusion of this case and had a jury essentially waiting in the wings. For
even
this case to conclude.
Even if Judge Castillo had a wide-open calendar, would that have made a difference, given the insufficiency of the explanation and excuse?
I believe because of the opportunity that the defendant had, it probably would not have. I can't speak for the judge, but in the government's view, he had ample opportunity to prepare and chose not to. With respect to the answers, was no hesitation on the defendant's part. He answered the questions, tried to explain how he had expended $47,000 of the union's money. Was a lack of preparation. The jury just chose to not find that those answers credible and convicted him of both counts. The judge, I believe, in this did not abuse his discretion, acted reasonably under the circumstances and the history of this case. The defendant received a fair trial. I believe he was convicted on the strength of the government's case and not on a lack of preparation. And if there are no questions, I will thank the court and have a seat. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anything further, Ms. Winslow? Well, thank you very much. And Ms. Winslow, we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment in this case and your assistance to the court as well as your client. The case is taken under advisement.